In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Imagine a court of law where prosecutors in a murder case could say, because I said so, and that was the extent of their legal argument. And that was all they needed. You're guilty, because I said so. You, the defendant, the accused, turn to the judge and start to say, but I didn't. Nope. The judge cut you off. The prosecutor said you're guilty. Therefore, you must be. The jury looks a little embarrassed. What do they know? They're not legal scholars. So they shrug. Well, he did have some rather fancy charts. All you've got is some actual evidence of you not being there, of you not only not being in the same room, you weren't even in the same state. But none of that matters, because the prosecutor said so. And it's actually worse than that. The prosecutor is hiding evidence that he knows you're not guilty, and that there wasn't even a murder in the first place. Now, that may sound like the argument for Democrats trying to impeach Trump, or like I could be talking about what passes as law enforcement over the FBI nowadays, but I'm actually talking about global warming. Because I said so has become the de facto argument of the global warming scaremongers. They put out fancy charts and clever buzzwords and marketing and official reports and claim there's all sorts of agreement on their side. 97% of climate scientists agree mankind is causing climate change because we said so. But let's reverse my legal scenario for a moment. Let's say you're the prosecutor. You've made things up. There is no evidence other than statistics and clever charts you've invented. And you just got word the murder victim has been spotted on a beach in Tahiti. If you're the prosecutor, what would you do? What lengths would you go to cover it up? Well, if you're a normal, honest person, you admit you made it all up. You'd admit your mistakes and come clean. But in this scenario, you can't, because there are trillions of dollars at stake. There are whole industries, universities, politicians, and political futures all at stake, all tied into this one case. So you plot on. You stick to your because I said so and just hope that the victim never decides to come back to the States. And oh, by the way, all that global warming? Well, the victim just booked a ticket. It's getting colder. I'd like to welcome all Dr. Tim Ball back to the show. He is a retired professor from the University of Winnipeg. He's a Canadian geographer and historical climatologist, best known for his public opposition to the so-called scientific consensus and the global warming controversy. Dr. Tim, it is great to talk to you again.
Once again, I always appreciate the opportunity to try and present the other side.
You have some exciting news, and that was part of the reason why we wanted to have you on, and that has to do with you winning your court case, but we'll get to that later in the show, because when we had first invited you back in when we were doing our series on American exceptionalism, there was some news about the IPCC that had just come out. That's the International Panel on Climate Change from the UN. And so what is the news that has come out about them?
Well, they've come out with their most recent report, which is AR5, that's Assessment Report 5. And it is in that they say that we've got to take some serious action on reduction of CO2 in the next 11 years. That got converted by the alarmists and the media, and particularly by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, into we've got 12 years left. And they don't say that at all, but they do say that we need to take serious action in the next 11 years. They don't do the, if we don't do it, it's the end of the world. And so you see how their work, which is very narrowly defined, And the biggest error that they make is the public believe that they're looking at climate change in total. They're not. They're only looking at human causes of climate change. And that is the definition that they were given to work on. So they allow all of these misrepresentations and misconceptions to go on out there. They don't step out to correct them. And it's almost like a politician who, you know, has all sorts of false information about him or her floating around there, but just leave it go. And therefore, they are as culpable in the deception as the people that were doing it in the first place.
So you said this is AR-5. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens 10 more reports from now when the IPCC brings out an AR-15. I'm not sure what the left will make of that. But anyway, as far as these assessment reports go, and as far as IPCC itself goes, have they ever brought out a report that says, no, everything's fine?
No, never. Because this is the problem, that the minute you identify a problem, it's automatically given a negative connotation. And then you say, oh, well, we got this problem. Well, what are we going to do? Oh, well, we better have investigate it. And the people that are then charged to investigate it, usually a government department, what they do is immediately make sure that the problem, or you know, they'll identify it as real and then elaborate on it. The minute you give anything to government to resolve, it absolutely guarantees it won't get resolved. It will get expanded and made worse. And so this is what's going on with the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. It's just that it's occurring at the level of the UN and therefore has an impact on every single country on the planet.
Well, in terms of these assessment reports, is it only ever looking at just the CO2 side? Because you mentioned that they mainly focus on man's issues. But does that always focus on just the CO2, or are there other aspects that they also look at?
Well, this is one of those very clever things, and this is how these people are so manipulative, because if they were asked to look at climate change, they would have to include everything from deep space cosmic radiation to the sun to the orbits of and everything else. But by giving them a very narrow definition, that's what I meant when I said they predetermined the outcome. And I'll give you the classic example. And this is how commissions of inquiry always operate. And I know we've talked about this before, but it bears repeating. There's a conflict. The politicians can't resolve it. They're getting different information from different scientists and experts. So they step out of it and say, okay, we'll have a commission of inquiry. And everybody says, oh, that's great. Let's take the politics out of the issue. In fact, what it does is give the politician total control, because they go back to their little political offices, and then they write the terms of reference, and they write the assumptions that you make, and therefore that predetermines the outcome. And I know the first commission of inquiry that I was put on was with regard to a conflict over a lake. And there's nothing more, you know, people were shooting each other. So I thought, well, yeah, great, commission of inquiry. But then I got the terms of reference from the government and the politicians, and it predetermined the outcome. And I called the politician and said, look, either you allow me to look at everything, or I'm going to go to the media and saying you're trying to control what I put out and say. And I'll give you an example of how this flies over the public. One of the biggest conspiracy theories on the internet, which of course has become a perfect vehicle for conspiracy theories, but the biggest one still out there is who shot John Kennedy. And the reason for that is because of the assumptions and limitations that were put on the Warren Commission.
Right.
Chief Justice, Chief Justice Warren, they said to him, well, why didn't you look at Jack Ruby and the mafia connection in Dallas? And he very calmly said, it wasn't in my terms of reference.
Wow.
Well, I knew exactly what he was saying, but the person interviewing him didn't know. And I know most of the public didn't know. So that's how they do it. That's how they do it. It appears that they're looking at everything, but in fact, they're controlling everything.
That's right. That's right. Okay, let's go and take a break there. Despite their best efforts, there is some headway in exposing the climate change fraud. We'll talk about that with Dr. Tim after this. And we're back. We're talking today to Dr. Tim Ball. He is a retired professor from the University of Winnipeg, best known for his public opposition to the so-called scientific consensus in the global warming controversy. A public opposition that got him into trouble, and lawsuits were filed, but he has managed to escape from those And we'll be updating you about the good news and all of that coming up here in the next segment. But we were talking about the IPCC and them bringing out their AR-5. And, of course, they're saying that we have to have more actions on CO2. And, you know, I think, though, despite all of the scaremongering by the left, and, you know, it really is amazing in many ways that they haven't gotten further down the road than they have. They have access to literally tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars that they can spend on marketing. And yet there's a tremendous amount of people that are pushing back on this, some of which I want to talk to you about on this one. But it really is kind of interesting because my producer, Carl, and I were talking about this after the last time we talked to you, that some of the difficulties really in moving forward the debate on climate change, but also really just exposing so much of the global warming fraud, is the fact that on the side, the skeptical side, that seems to have the real scientists that are willing to look at this objectively, they're out there, they're scientists, and yet they're being forced to try to be marketers, versus the global warming scaremongers, which have a whole bunch of marketers trying to pretend that they're scientists. And so the reality is that you just don't really get down to the truth of the matter.
Right. And then you add to that the fact that the population it very generally divides into 80% that are comfortable with the arts and abhor numbers and run away from numbers, and the 20% that are comfortable with science. And this was the challenge that we had when we were talking with Trump about what to do about the global warming issue. And the message to him was, look, we can list, in fact, you can go in the UK court that was required to look at Gore's Inconvenient Truth. They listed the 9 major scientific errors in that movie. So we could do that for Trump. We said, we can give you those. But the minute you start talking about those, somebody's going to ask you a question and you won't be able to answer it. And they'll make you look stupid in 2 seconds flat.
Right.
It's like the lawyers say, you only talk about things that you know the answers to. And so what we told Trump to do was stay away from the science. The Paris Climate Agreement is a bad deal. That's what you're good on, bad deals. So we sent him the Paris Climate Agreement. He looked at it and said, great, we're out of here. That's the end of it. And what was interesting was that his daughter, Ivanka, said, no, I want you to sign the Paris Climate Agreement. And he came back, his people came back to us and said, no, my daughter wants us to sign it. We said, show her the deal. She's a businesswoman. She'll understand. And within a couple of hours, the word came back, yep, nope, no problem. Hmm. And so this is why the focus on the legislation and the economics that come out of this science, this bad science, is really what the politicians focus on and need to focus on. And that's the argument that they can make. So, for example, you can say that, well, if you completely implemented the whole Kyoto Protocol, you might lower temperature by 0.53 degrees Celsius by the year 2050. But that's going to cost you $13 trillion. Well, those are numbers that politicians can understand and support, and the public understand, and so it doesn't require any discussion of the science of it. It's just the pure logic and practicality of it all.
Well, so let's say for a moment that we did spend the $13 trillion that they wanted us to spend. Would it, in fact, have the results that they claim that it will?
Nope. And one of the things I've said from the very beginning is if you implement or if you take every person off the planet, take all of them and stop all their activities and industries and so on, and leave one person behind and say, look, after all the people are gone, we want you to go around the world and measure the level of CO2 in the atmosphere. And she would not be able to notice the difference. Hmm. There would be no difference, even with all the people gone. And so that puts it in perspective.
It does. And it's really kind of unfortunate in a lot of ways that more people don't get that message. But, you know, you guys
Let me elaborate on that just a bit more for a couple of seconds. The CO2 is from a variety of sources. So you get CO2 being put into the atmosphere from the oceans and from the forests, rotting vegetation and all the rest of the things, soil and so on. The amount of CO2 that humans put up, which, by the way, is calculated by the IPCC, so it's a self-serving number, but the number that they give us is right now they're saying it's 11 gigatons a year. Well, that is in the error of the estimate of how much CO2 is going into the atmosphere from the oceans. So, in other words, we estimate that the oceans are putting up between 90 and 100 gigatons, so 10 gigaton error of the estimate, which is equal to what they claim that humans are putting up in total. So you see the problem of what they're saying. And of course, as I said, we've got no global measurements of CO2 in the atmosphere at all.
Yeah. Well, I do think, you know, despite the fact that you guys don't have trillions of dollars at your disposal for marketing, I think we are making some headways in the argument. One, you're getting an invite to Glenn Beck's radio show coming up on September 15th or thereabouts. That's pretty awesome. Your own book is going to be published in Norwegian. You mentioned that going to the show. But, you know, I think the other thing that really settles this debate is what happened recently when Obama bought a beachfront house.
Yep.
If somebody who believes in global warming and it's causing sea levels to rise, they're not going to plunk down $15 million for an oceanfront villa. The debate is over, and Obama just killed it. Let's go ahead and take a break there. Everyone, stay with us. Well, let's catch that after the break. Everyone, stay with us. We'll have more with Dr. Tim after this. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Talk today to Dr. Tim Ball, retired professor from the University of Winnipeg. He's a climatologist and best known for his public opposition to the so-called scientific consensus and the global warming controversy. He's got some books out there, Human-Caused Global Warming, The Biggest Deception in History, and also The Deliberate Corruption of Climate Science. And now, is it one of those that is going to be published in Norwegian?
Yes, the second one you mentioned.
The Deliberate Corruption of Climate Science. Good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did tease on the way out there and was not very kind in not giving you a chance to respond to the fact that Obama plunked down $15 million for an oceanfront villa for somebody that supposedly believes the ocean's rising. So what did you have to say on that?
Well, what we could say is that he should be have a lawsuit brought against him, but he said also that lawsuit should also include Al Gore, because Al Gore built a waterfront property in California.
That's right.
And what I would argue is that this was manipulation and power, because they both of them went around the world saying that the sea level is going to rise, which then lowered the value of seafront property, and they moved in and got it cheap.
You know, that is a unique take on that, and I think you're right. But, you know, that's now my go-to answer. When somebody on Twitter starts saying that, oh, well, the climate change, we've got 10 years to do something about it, that's my answer is, nope, you've lost this, because when the dear leader, Obama, plunks down $15 million for an oceanfront villa, it's pretty clear that the debate is over and Obama killed it. Climate change is for chumps. So we were so excited to hear that you won your court case against Michael Mann. Michael Mann, in case people need a quick reminder, is the guy that invented the hockey stick, or as I would normally refer to it, the science shtick, who sued you for defamation. But before we get to that victory, remind our audience why he brought it in the first place.
Well, it was one of three lawsuits, and of course the bigger question is, why am I the only one that's got lawsuits? The simple answer is that I'm qualified, and they can't say I'm not qualified. And notice that nobody ever asks Al Gore how he's qualified to talk about these things. So the qualification goes one way. So they couldn't say I wasn't qualified. And the second thing is that the good Lord gave me an ability to explain complex issues, and particularly scientific issues, in a way that people could understand. And I honed those skills teaching a science credit for art students for 25 years. Wow. So uh, that both of those things then made me a real threat to what was going on. They said, look, not this guy is qualified, plus people understand what he's saying. And one of the reasons that they got away with the global warming scam is because most of the public don't understand the science. So they kept their mouths shut rather than show their ignorance.
Well, there's they do that on purpose, of course, because there's a certain amount of faith that goes with that. That a scientist knows what they're talking about, and a scientist, you know, they kind of have this aura of really, in some ways, a religious aura that the sanctity of science, you know, that they wouldn't lie about science, that they wouldn't use science to manipulate, and yet that's exactly what they've done.
Well, and of course, that in the longer term is the real danger of what they've done.
Yes.
Because they've taken away that credibility of science. And, that's a real problem.
It sure is. So why exactly did he lose?
As I said, I got three lawsuits, all from the same lawyer, all from members of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. The first one was Gordon McBean, who was the Canadian representative at the initiation of the IPCC. And that lawsuit, when we received it, my wife and I said, look, we can't. We went to a lawyer and you start at $400 an hour. And so we said, no, we can't afford that. And so we simply withdrew what I wrote. That actually turned out to be a good thing, because then the second lawsuit came from, again, the same lawyer, but from an Andrew Weaver, who is a computer modeler who'd been doing climate models at the University of Victoria. And now, by the way, is the leader of the Green Party in British Columbia. He's become a politician. And so we won that lawsuit primarily because we were able to show that his agenda was a political agenda and not a scientific agenda. Hmm. And so the courts bought into that. The Michael Mann lawsuit, of course, was that I gave a public presentation about the hockey stick. Now, just for the people that don't understand, Michael Mann called it the hockey stick. And the reason he did that was because he created a graph that showed that there was virtually no temperature change over 1,000 years. That was the handle of the hockey stick. And then starting in 1880, the global temperature suddenly turned up dramatically. And that, of course, became the blade of the hockey stick. But there's so many scientific problems with what he did. For example, he only used one tree ring for the handle of the hockey stick. And it was a set of tree rings that everybody said, you don't use that, that tree ring. It's unreliable. I forgot the name of the tree, but they grow in oak pine. It grows in California. And it's completely unreliable, and the science community say don't use it for any research, but that's what he did. And then
the reason he used that is because it fit his model. That's
exactly
what
it's cherry picking the data that will prove what you want to prove, and of course the other thing is that he claimed that the tree rings represent temperature, but they don't. Tree ring studies started at the University of Arizona. It started initially as dendrochronology because each tree ring represented 1 year, and therefore it was a time. You could measure time using it.
Well, and of course, the other thing that's really famous about that hockey stick, too, is he basically got rid of the entire medieval warming period and basically changed all of the data in order to create the graph that he did. But there is more to this story, especially Dr. Tim's lawsuit here. Dr. Tim is often called a global warming denier. Just wait until you hear how the left, after Dr. Tim's court victory, are suddenly legal deniers because they think he really didn't win. Stay with us. And we're back. This is the Ice Fly Radio Show. Talk today to Dr. Tim Ball. He is one of the leading critics of the so-called global warming controversy, especially in terms of his public opposition to the so-called scientific consensus. We're talking today about your victory in court. This is one of the three court cases. You've prevailed in all of them. The Michael Mann one has been really kind of a shock, and I think that sent shockwaves, really, throughout a lot of not just the climate scaremongers, but also really it's given wings, I think, to a lot of the climate so-called deniers. But, you know, I was a bit astounded to see some of the left-wing global warming alarmist propaganda sites like the Daily Kos, KOS, say that you really didn't win and the court just had mercy on you. And here's what they say exactly. Quote, if you've been cruising the denial highway over the past week or so, you may have come to believe that Dr. Michael Mann has lost his defamation suit. But rather, the court dismissed the case on the basis that it has dragged on and been delayed for so long. Ball requested a ruling based on the timing instead of merits to allow the court to avoid the messiness of whether or not his attacks on Mann's climate science were valid. And then they go on to say, in reality, the court tossed the case in what appears to be an act of pity for Dr. Tim Ball. I have more of that, which I'll continue here in a moment, but it's actually from Michael Mann himself. But would you care to respond to that?
Yes, it's very simple. The delay in the case was one of the factors. It has gone on since 2011. And, of course, in Canada, if it was a criminal case, the law requires that it be settled within 2 years. Otherwise, it's thrown out. And we've even had cases of murders being rejected because the case wasn't taken to court within the 2 years. But so this had gone on since 2011. And the delay was because, of course, they didn't want to go to court. All they wanted to do was have it cost me money and to drag it out and keep it going.
Well, and so, what they failed to mention, yeah, too, is the fact that it was Mann was the one that was doing all the dragging. You guys kept asking for the data. He said, oh, okay, we'll submit it. And then he didn't. And then, okay, this time I'll submit it. And he didn't. He's the one that kept dragging it out. And I think it's kind of ironic in a way. I mean, this has gone on for 9 years. Back then, the world was supposed to end in 10 years when he started all this. So thank God the court case was dismissed, because the world could have ended and we'd never know how it would have turned out. So one more year and we would have all been dead. So thankfully the court tossed it.
But I'll tell you one thing, by the way, that supports that. We actually had a court date set of 20th of February 2017. We were supposed to go to the court on that date for the trial. Yes. It was Mann that canceled it.
Yep, that's
not
right.
Not us. He canceled it. Yeah, so,
But anyway. They keep saying, oh, this is just mercy to, you know, not have it drag out so long because you're old, apparently, and because of your health. And we'll come back to that. But Mann had this to say, quote, the court did not find any of Ball's defenses were valid. The court did not find that any of my claims were not valid. The provision in the court's order relating to costs does not mean that I will pay Ball's legal fees. In making his application based on delay, Ball effectively told the world that he did not want a verdict on the real issues in the lawsuit. I imagine you have something to say about that.
Well, that's his interpretation of it. If you read the actual ruling, they said that Mann never produced any evidence to support his arguments. And that... yes, the delay was part of the reason, but it was only one small part of the reason for the case being dismissed. The bigger reason was that he failed to present the evidence that they sought. And of course, it was that evidence that we were looking for all along. You see, when he produced the hockey stick, normally what happens is if you do something in science, you provide for other scientists all of the data and all of the methods that you've used so that it's and that the critical phrase is reproducible results.
That's right. And that is standard practice for any scientific study. I would really like to see somebody that has a PhD like he does. I would really like to see somebody like him try to pull that in getting his dissertation to begin with, where you don't publish your data in such a way that somebody else could then replicate it, because he would never have gotten his PhD.
That's right. And of course, he still hasn't produced about 20% of that data, and that's what we were looking for. And I'll tell you the risk that I took In Canada, if you have a defamation suit against you, there are two ways that you can defend yourself. You could say that it was fair comment, and then the judge or the jury can decide whether it was a fair comment or not. If you lose a fair comment case, the most fine ever been assigned has been $20,000. So in other words, it's a very simple get out of jail, easy and quick and cheap card. But the other way you can defend a defamation lawsuit is to say, no, what I said was the truth. But if you say that, and I chose to take if you argue your case is the truth, they must then produce all the documents that you want. Well, of course, this is what we wanted with the Mann case. We wanted all of his formulas and data and so on. And so I filed my lawsuit as the truth. The difficulty for me with that is that the cost just goes through the roof. Well, and sure.
Not only do they have to produce evidence, but then you have to produce evidence to show why you're right.
Exactly. And not only that, but if I lost a truth case, they could take everything I owned. They could fine me. There's no limit on the amount of fine that could be assigned to me. Wow. So I took an enormous risk because what I needed was the documents. He still hasn't produced the documents.
No. Nope.
He
does actually lie about that in that article, and I'll bring that back up. But just real quick, it does say that Mann and his lawyers have a month to decide if they want to appeal. So are they appealing?
We haven't heard anything yet, but we're 2 or 3 days left.
Yeah.
So I'll let you know if they do appeal. I suspect they will.
I would think he'd almost have to. Otherwise, it's an admission of defeat and a defeat of him and his science shtick. Speaking of that, what happens now with that? We will talk about that in the next segment. And welcome back. We're talking today to Dr. Tim Ball. Very excited that he's won his lawsuit against Michael Mann, although they may possibly want to appeal that, and I would almost say they'd have to at this point. Otherwise, it's an admission that his stick isn't valid. And you know that I think is really why this matters so much. Your particular lawsuit, because even Scientific American admitted that, quote, if you take down Mann, the rest of the IPCC's conclusions about anthropogenic climate change, in other words, man-caused climate change, would follow, and it would also fall apart. So I think your court case has tremendous importance here for the whole climate change debate. That Daily Kos article, I'm not even sure why they call themselves Kos. Maybe Kos is short for commies. But anyway, it goes on to say deniers are also claiming, deniers being you, are also claiming that the hockey stick graph, with which Mann supposedly refused to release the data for, has now been broken and ruled a fraud. So what are your takes on that? I mean, you can't really say that it's a fraud because you haven't seen the data yet.
Well, no, but there's enough there, and you can reconstruct enough of what he did and how he did it to show that it's a fraud. I mean, but the very simple thing, for example, is that the handle of the hockey stick is a single tree ring, which is presented as representing temperature, when in fact tree rings represent precipitation. And that was the point I was making earlier. The other thing is that the blade of the hockey stick is an instrumental temperature record collected from thermometers, and it is scientifically absolutely wrong to put data from one source of one method on a graph with another method. So in other words, strapping the blade onto the handle, it is scientifically wrong, just simply wrong.
So and good yet, science, that's what he did. Had he been using good science, he would have used tree ring data and good tree ring data for that entire period. And then made your graph. And instead, he used tree ring for part of it and then used, these are actual temperature readings.
Right. And And he talks about that. He gives it away. This is what's amazing about it. And I guess he figured nobody would find it or see it. But you see, he was plotting the temperature tree ring stuff. And if you look at the blade of the hockey stick, it's gradually declining. And then when he gets into the 20th century, which, of course, he wanted to show was suddenly very warm because of human CO2, he simply stopped using the tree ring data and grafted on this instrumental record. And he refers to it as he had to do this to hide the decline. That's the phrase that he uses. I had to hide the decline. So he as I said, he admits that he did it deliberately, and but of course most people wouldn't have known that this was scientifically unacceptable, or even have seen what was wrong with it.
Well, maybe there weren't any tree rings since 1880s.
that's a big problem. Yeah. And by the way, a lot of the modern tree rings, of course, can't be used because they're contaminated by, increased CO2 in the atmosphere from plants nearby, human sources, which increases the growth. So you've got to be very, very careful with using tree ring data.
Well, it really is rather amazing. You know, as far as the data is concerned, because that was one of your big arguments, show us the data so that we can dispute that. He refused to release that. But that Daily Coast article again says that man has released the data. They say the hockey stick data and code are all available and have been for more than a decade. And the link to the FTP site that's hosted the data since, by the looks of it, at least 2003. So the problem there is, though, that he released the underlying research data, but not the computer codes that he used to come up with that hockey stick, which is what he has called his intellectual property. Again, try that in any other scientific field, and you'd be laughed out of the business.
Well, that whole question of intellectual property, as you know, it's part of the ongoing debate with trade deals with China, for example, and the whole TPP, America got out of it because it required that they surrender intellectual property to. And of course, the Trump administration is saying, look, we've got to stop China stealing our intellectual property. What Michael Mann did was that he got a lawyer and in defense of a lawsuit brought against him by Ken Cuccinelli. And Cuccinelli was the attorney general in Virginia when Mann was at the University of Virginia. He later ran for the governor of the state, but lost that. But anyway, Cuccinelli brought a lawsuit against Mann saying, we want your data. We want all of your data. And so it went to court. Mann won the case. And he won the case because they got a judge, a liberal judge, who said, no, it's his intellectual property, which, of course, is utter nonsense. Yeah. First of all, as Cuccinelli argued, look, all of your research funds were taxpayer money. And therefore, the taxpayer actually owns your research, not you. And then you use the research results to create energy and environment policy that's impacted the whole world. So your failure to provide how you got that data and where it came from, I think it not borders on criminal. It is criminal.
Yeah, think so. Yeah. I think the other thing that's really amazing here is to think that, if it's legitimate science, then wouldn't you want to put that out there so that anybody can then replicate it like what we were describing earlier? But it's really amazing to think that man would rather lose all of those fees and everything else, the court fees and everything else, rather than simply hand over the data.
But the problem was he didn't lose any of it. As I said, the court ruled in his favor and said it's his intellectual property.
No. I mean with your case. That he was willing to give up the court costs and everything else, probably may end up losing more money, and he's more willing to do that than to simply do what any other responsible scientist would do, and it would be just hand over the data so somebody else could take a look at it. Unfortunately, we are up against a break. Hurricane Dorian is being used right now by the left as evidence of climate crisis caused by global warming. Well, there was a little something else happening at the exact same time that would put global warming into doubt, but somehow mysteriously it never got mentioned. But we will after this. Final segment now with Dr. Tim Ball. Just won his court case against Dr. Michael Mann and his infamous hockey shtick. So one last question on that before we get into Hurricane Dorian, which is that if you win your case, does that essentially destroy the whole hockey stick?
Yes, and because we're working on now, and in fact I'm working on an article, a title of which is The Implications for Climate Change Theory in the Recent Court Ruling in Mann versus Ball. So the fact that we won the case is one thing, but then, as my lawyer and I have agreed, the scientific implication of that now is critical to the whole world. And so I will now show what he did, how he achieved the hockey stick, and then everybody, as I've already done briefly on the program here, and so everybody will say, no, then the hockey stick is dead. The hockey stick is broken, and as you know, it's illegal to play with a broken hockey stick.
Yes, and as a Canadian, I'm sure that you're very well aware of that. So, So the left has been saying that Hurricane Dorian is evidence of global warming. It is evidence that mankind is causing more of these hurricanes to occur. It being a Category 5. I mean, it was the usual tripe that there are more of these than ever before, and we'll see more of these unless we do something. And by doing something, they mean spending trillions of dollars. So can you respond to the charges that a Category 5 hurricane is evidence of global warming and that we're seeing more of these?
Yes. The first thing is that the categories are assigned by NOAA. And they know that the media want to have as severe a storm as possible. We saw this with Katrina. ABC were pushing NOAA to say that Katrina was a Category 5 before it hit New Orleans. In fact, by the time it came ashore, it was barely a Category 3. But NOAA determines the category of a hurricane by measuring the wind speed. But here's the problem that they have, and they still have the problem. They've got no way of measuring the wind speed at the surface out over the ocean. They could only measure wind speed once it comes ashore. So what they do is they fly aircraft through the top of the hurricane and then, using a formula, calculate what that wind speed translates into a surface wind speed. But of course, so in other words, they can control it. And if you want to go from a Category 4 to a Category 5, you've only got to increase the wind speed by 1 mile per hour. Well, that's easy to do if you're in control of the numbers. And so the whole thing is just phony as can be. And as I said, it's all about the agencies that are doing it.
It's like what we said before. It's the global warming alarmists have all the marketing on their side, and unfortunately, they control a lot of the data that gets put into that. So the other thing, you know, in terms of evidence of global warming, to me, it was evidence that their models don't work. I saw Bernie Sanders tweeting about Dorian being a Category 5, and it's evidence of a climate crisis, but it didn't even last 24 hours. After that tweet, it was downgraded to a Category 2 and pretty much missed Florida other than skimming the coast. So to me, this is pretty clear and compelling evidence that you can't trust their climate change models out 100 years or even 10 years when they can't predict a hurricane for more than 24 hours. Am I misreading this?
No, you're exactly reading it right. And I was speaking on different radio programs, and I predicted before it happened that it was going to turn away from the coast and head northwest, because all you had to do was look at the pressure patterns and what was guiding it. It's another of these things that got picked up by the media and by the environmental alarmists. And they distort the thing. In fact, the number of severe hurricanes has decreased for the last 30 years, not increased.
That's right.
And so the actual evidence is contrary to what you're being told through the media.
Yeah. Well, I think the head said something like, well, this is the fourth year in a row with a Category 5. And, you know, it's the same old, it's the scaremongering. It's the marketing. Yep. It's the marketing of scaremongering. So What was interesting was that at the exact same time that Dorian was churning away in the Atlantic, and at the exact same time that Bernie was churning away, safe at home in one of his three mansions, there was a band of intrepid climate change warriors who were being rescued. They had set off for the North Pole from Norway to film a documentary about disappearing Arctic sea ice, but they didn't even make it halfway there before their ship got stuck in sea ice. I mean, and remember, this is the first week of September, so it's still summer. And they had to be rescued by diesel-powered helicopters. So if Dorian is evidence of global warming, how is a ship full of useful idiots stuck in ice at the tail end of summer also not evidence of global warming?
Well, I think your comment about useful idiots and they should get trapped and get left up there. I mean, why should we go and why as I always say, I'm my brother's keeper, but I'm not my stupid brother's keeper. And so if you do things like that, but of course it's all for exploitation and alarmism and everything else. And this is going on around the world. Until people start to realize how much they're being misled and all of their predictions. You mentioned, for example, the predictions. Every single computer model prediction of global temperature since 1990 has been wrong. Every single one. And yet they continue to put out these numbers. And you when you look at the Hurricane Dorian, the British, they put out the two models. They used two models on most TV and radio stations. One was the American model, NOAA, and the other was the UK Met Office, the English model. And they both showed the hurricane going in different directions. And yet they're supposedly using the same data.
Yeah.
And this just shows you how rubbish they are. The models simply don't work.
They don't work. And not only that, no. But they have tried to use those same models to predict backwards in time,
yep.
And yet they've gotten that wrong. I mean, if you can't predict yesterday's weather, maybe it's time to give up the whole prediction science. Dr. Tim Ball, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. I want to thank you so much for your time today, and congratulations on winning that huge court case.
Well, thank you very kindly, and thank you for your allowing me to be on the air. I really appreciate it.
Just a quick elaboration on Michael Mann's data. He did put the raw data online that anyone could run through Microsoft Excel or other data analysis program, but, and here's the important part, he created his own special program to analyze the data. Essentially, it's like having his own version of Excel, which doesn't analyze the data in the same mathematical way. Instead of 2 plus 2 equals 4, his special Excel could come up with 2 plus 2 equals 7, point green to the power of unicorn squared. Good science is about replication. But I guess for Michael Mann, global warming is not only not science, it's not even math. Truth, it matters. Or as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.